This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. Following the footsteps to freedom, five people from Connecticut recently completed a journey through part of Delmarva to retrace as accurately as possible a once-enslaved man's escape to freedom and a better life. Delaware Public Media contributor Mark Fowler has more on their trip, which included a portion of the first state.
He's kind of been in the background, but this journey that we're going on is pushing him to the foreground.
Pastor Adam Bowles of Castle Church in Norwich, Connecticut, is talking about James Lindsay Smith, who settled in the New England community and became a leader, particularly in the black community. He had a shoemaking business, and he ministered in Norwich. How he got there is detailed in his 1881 autobiography. Years earlier, James Lindsay Smith was enslaved in Virginia, and he made his way through Maryland, Delaware, and Philadelphia, a perilous journey over land and water. Bowles says the idea of retracing that journey developed out of a discussion at a church picnic.
But it has grown into something way beyond my expectations, and there are so many possibilities that come along with this journey. There's more than 100 slave narratives that were published. He's one of them.
Castle Church has a race and justice ministry with the theme of resilience.
As we settled on the theme of resilience, which we think is an uplifting message as we're coming out of the pandemic and very timely, and we want to encourage our city that's been through a lot, just like many cities have, we identify these two historical figures. They both lived, James Lindsay Smith and his contemporary Sarah Harris Fairweather, who was the first black student at Prudence Crandall's school in Canterbury. We identified the two of them as the subjects of a very big mural. It's quite the honor to now go on this journey to retrace his steps. His autobiography is such a treasure for the city of Norwich, and it perfectly captures the theme of resilience.
But to determine the route, it would literally take boots on the ground. Those boots were worn by Jim Meek of Newcastle. Meek points out that he's not a licensed historian, but he utilized the skills he obtained in a college course paid for by his employer to learn map making. He undertook a project to find out the route of the Frenchtown Newcastle Railroad. A member of the local historical society put Bowles in touch with Meek about possibly creating a route to approximate Smith's journey.
It turned out to be not so easy as originally planned.
Parts of the railroad are now used by modern-day trains, and that posed a problem.
One of the routes that James Lindsay Smith took, part of it was existing roads in addition to the railroad. So the existing railroads had been there from long before he was there. There have been roads down to the Elkton area since very, very long time ago. We're talking about 1700s.
Meek recently traveled much of the 18-mile route between Frenchtown and Newcastle, doing much of that traveling on foot, speaking with homeowners and property owners along the way. In places, the terrain is difficult. Because the rail bed was elevated, portions have been eroded, and streams have been created. Along some sections of the route, you'd need to cut through overgrown brush.
A mile and a half of the area up around Newcastle is accessible, and down near Frenchtown, a couple miles are accessible. But the other stuff is not. It's just railroad or impenetrable.
According to Smith's autobiography, he escaped with two companions from the northern neck of Virginia, and together they sailed up the Chesapeake Bay to south of Elkton. At one point, Smith got separated from the other two. He could have taken a couple of different routes to Newcastle, as he described being along roads and on the tracks. He admitted to being a bit frightened by a railroad engine, which was new to him. But Bowles says Newcastle turned out to be a turning point in Smith's journey.
It's here where he almost quits. He almost gives up. His two friends move on. James Lindsay Smith was injured as a child on the plantation, and so he can't keep up with them. They go on, and he has this moment where he thinks, I'm just going to give myself up to the slave catchers. But then a voice tells him, no, keep going. If you're going to be caught, let it be caught on the road to freedom.
Although he reunited with his compadres in Delaware, Smith did not speak kindly of Newcastle in his autobiography. How we ever passed through Newcastle as we did without being detected is more than I can tell, for it was one of the worst slave towns in the country, and the law was such that no steamboat or anything else could take a colored person to Philadelphia without proving his or her freedom. Smith wrote, "What makes it so astonishing to me is that we walked aboard right in sight of everybody, and no one spoke a word to us. We went to the captain's office and bought our tickets without a word being said to us." Off they would go to Philadelphia. Later, Smith would become part of the community in Norwich, Connecticut. By then, he was married with children. Did Smith get help along the way in Delaware? According to Meek, there's still much to learn.
We know an awful lot about the Underground Railroad and the efforts of the people that supported the escaping slaves in Wilmington. And we don't know anything about it in Newcastle other than many people in Newcastle believe that there are Underground Railroad hiding places or something like that in Newcastle.
James Lindsay Smith lived out his final years in Norwich. One reason the Connecticut Church wants to retrace his steps is to permanently memorialize him with a mural at Jubilee Park, a once-blighted courtyard in Norwich that's being transformed into a community space, with a message that, again, celebrates the theme of resilience of Smith's life and in his autobiography.
There's so much that he reflects on, from the race riots to the exodus of the black community from the South to the North, to many other deeply meaningful, powerful moments that I can see this being part of an annual remembrance. And I really do wish more and more organizations would highlight his life.
There's just so much interesting to learn about Newcastle, and that's one of the reasons that I find it so much fun. And this was a great project for me to have a chance to get out in the field and try to explore what I could and make contact with the homeowners. That's essential, because you can't go on these properties, for the most part, without permission.
Meek is struck by the clarity of Smith's writing as he described his youth as a slave, the cruelty of the conditions, the fear and uncertainty he faced in Connecticut as he spoke about slavery at abolitionist meetings, and the time he was able to go back and see his former owner.
I think it's just fascinating. I think it's a great educational opportunity and something useful for learning more about the role of Newcastle in all of this.
It's a life and a story that Bowles says deserves to be told and more widely known.
Every movie I've ever seen from a kid till now that had to do with black history, if you read his autobiography, it's like that reel starts spinning in your head, because you can see how emotionally intense this was for his life. And it's a real contribution to American history.
Mark Fowser, Delaware Public Media.
Thanks, Mark. And stay with us. The Green continues next with Arts Playlist, where we learn about a new exhibition that delves into a connection between Winterthur and the White House. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media.